Practice Test 3. This is the Cambridge English C1 Business Hire Listening Test 3. You will hear an introduction to each part of the test, and you will have time to look at the questions before you listen. You will hear each piece twice. While you are listening, you should write your answers on the question paper. There will now be a pause. Please ask any questions now, because you must not speak during the test. Now open your question paper and look at part one. Part one, questions 1 to 12. You will hear the training manager at a technology company talk about the history of the company to a group of newly hired employees. Write 1 to 3 words or a number in the numbered spaces on the notes or forms below. You will hear the recording twice. Now listen and complete the notes.
Hello, everyone. My name is Chris Abbott, and I'm the Senior Training Manager here. I'd like to welcome you all to the company on your first day and begin the induction process. I'll start by giving you some background information about the company to help you settle into being part of the great team we have here. After that, you'll be divided into groups depending on which division you'll be working in, and given department-specific training either by myself or one of my team. One thing we're incredibly proud of here is our global reach and success. Our current best estimate is that around 30% of all websites are built on our platform. That's more than 60 million websites in total. That's pretty impressive in its own right. But I can add that almost one-third of the top 10 million websites use our platform. So we're not just widely used, we're used by many of the biggest names on the internet. Those numbers are remarkable, as I'm sure you'll agree. But I want to be clear that our goal is not to get bigger or add more users. Our goal is much simpler than that. Keep improving our product. In that way, not only will growth happen automatically, but so will the satisfaction of our users, and it's that satisfaction that we are always striving for. The success we currently enjoy did not happen overnight. Our two founders, Hannah and Mike, first launched the product 15 years ago. At that time, it was one of several platforms offering the same kinds of features. Over the years, those competitors fell by the wayside or changed their licensing terms. Our platform, though, has remained open source throughout. Open source software is something Hannah and Mike feel strongly about. And we feel that this is one of the main reasons for our success, and the continued loyalty of our users. In the very early years, our platform was suitable only for publishing blog posts. Since then, we've added many important and innovative features. 13 years ago, we added themes and plugins. For those of you who won't be working in our technical department, plugins are a way for external developers to add features to the core platform. Around 10 years ago, we also added a major update that improved the user interface, among many other changes. As the way people use the internet has changed, our platform has also adapted. In the last 5 years, for instance, we've added support for audio and video, meaning that people building sites with our platform can include music or videos. We've also added new attractive themes, improved security features like stronger password protection, and a host of other features, many of which were requested by our users. And we're not done yet. Later this year, we expect to launch the first major update to our platform since 2014. That's one reason why we've needed extra help, in fact. The new update has been a long time coming, and we're confident our users are going to love it. Okay, enough about the history for now. Let me divide you into groups.
Now you will hear the recording again.
Hello everyone. My name is Chris Abbott and I'm the Senior Training Manager here. I'd like to welcome you all to the company on your first day and begin the induction process. I'll start by giving you some background information about the company to help you settle into being part of the great team we have here. After that, you'll be divided into groups depending on which division you'll be working in, and given department-specific training either by myself or one of my team. One thing we're incredibly proud of here is our global reach and success. Our current best estimate is that around 30% of all websites are built on our platform. That's more than 60 million websites in total. That's pretty impressive in its own right. But I can add that almost one-third of the top 10 million websites use our platform. So we're not just widely used, we're used by many of the biggest names on the internet. Those numbers are remarkable, as I'm sure you'll agree, but I want to be clear that our goal is not to get bigger or add more users. Our goal is much simpler than that. Keep improving our product. In that way, not only will growth happen automatically, but so will the satisfaction of our users, and it's that satisfaction that we are always striving for. The success we currently enjoy did not happen overnight. Our two founders, Hannah and Mike, first launched the product 15 years ago. At that time, it was one of several platforms offering the same kinds of features. Over the years, those competitors fell by the wayside or changed their licensing terms. Our platform, though, has remained open source throughout. Open source software is something Hannah and Mike feel strongly about. And we feel that this is one of the main reasons for our success and the continued loyalty of our users. In the very early years, our platform was suitable only for publishing blog posts. Since then, we've added many important and innovative features. 13 years ago, we added themes and plugins. For those of you who won't be working in our technical department, plugins are a way for external developers to add features to the core platform. Around 10 years ago, we also added a major update that improved the user interface, among many other changes. As the way people use the internet has changed, our platform has also adapted. In the last 5 years, for instance, we've added support for audio and video, meaning that people building sites with our platform can include music or videos. We've also added new attractive themes, improved security features like stronger password protection, and a host of other features, many of which were requested by our users. And we're not done yet. Later this year, we expect to launch the first major update to our platform since 2014. That's one reason why we've needed extra help, in fact. The new update has been a long time coming, and we're confident our users are going to love it. Okay, Enough about the history for now. Let me divide you into groups.
That is the end of part one. You now have 20 seconds to check your answers. Part 2. Questions 13 to 22. You will hear five people talking about what motivated their career choice and about what they hope to achieve next in their career. For each recording, there are two tasks. Look at task 1. For each question 13 to 17, choose the career motivation that each person mentions from the list A to H. Now look at task 2. For each question 18 to 22, choose the goal that each person hopes to achieve next from the list A to H. Do not use any letter more than once. You will hear the recording twice. You now have 30 seconds to read the two lists. Now listen and do the two tasks. Speaker 1.
I studied business at university with the intention of working in the stock market. That idea didn't set my pulse racing, but I didn't know what else to do with my life, and the prospect of making a decent salary was attractive. By chance, a friend took me to a screening of a documentary about children living in poverty. I couldn't believe conditions like that existed in this country, and I just knew I had to do something about it. So I immediately applied to work for a charity. The money isn't great, but I feel an incredible sense of purpose in what I do every day, and we're making progress in the towns where we work. Conditions aren't as bad as they were a few years ago. If we can keep that progress going, I'll be happy.
Speaker 2.
I'm taller and bigger than a lot of people, so finding clothes or shoes that fit me is a constant challenge and not one that I enjoy. Even when I could find things that were the right size, the range of colours or styles was always limited. I often ended up wearing things because I could wear them, rather than because I wanted to. Over the years, whenever I met somebody else who was big or tall, we would commiserate with each other about the difficulty of finding things that fit. Then, one day, something clicked, and I thought to myself that maybe I should open a shop selling such things. Success was almost immediate. I'm doing so well, in fact, that I'm hoping to open a second branch in the not-too-distant future.
Speaker 3. I've been a scientist for a couple of decades now. My work is important, but pretty complex. I would often get feedback that I was good at explaining my work, so I approached a publisher about developing a popular guide to the field, and my proposal was accepted. I'm almost finished with the writing, and my hope is that it will be out next year. As to how I got started, a science teacher at school took me aside after class one day and told me that I asked really insightful questions. I didn't often get praise from adults, so her comment not only stayed with me, but also opened my eyes to the fact that science was something I was good at and enjoyed. After that, my career path was pretty much set. Speaker 4.
I've enjoyed tinkering around in the kitchen since I was a young kid, helping my mother and father to prepare dinner. I loved the feeling of being able to make something delicious out of everyday ingredients. And I loved the reactions of family and friends to the food I created even more. Needless to say, it wasn't a surprise to anyone when I became a chef. I'm not one of these superstar chefs who is a household name, but I do feel I've achieved a lot professionally. Now, I'm interested in pushing myself and learning new things. I'm particularly fascinated by the incredible variety of Asian food, and so I'm planning to spend a couple of years over there learning from some of the masters. The language barrier may be a problem, but good food and good cooking is a language anyone can understand.
Speaker 5.
After college, I fell into a job teaching English overseas. It wasn't really what I wanted to do, but it felt like a good stopgap. I was on a plane home to visit my family one day and was sitting next to somebody in the advertising industry. He liked to talk. I was happy just to listen and ask questions, and the stories he told me about his work really resonated with me. I got his business card and contacted him about the possibility of getting an entry-level position at his firm. To my surprise, the response was positive, and within a few months I was back in this country permanently and working my way up the corporate ladder. An ad I created was recently put up for an award, and I'll find out whether I've won in the next couple of days. Fingers crossed.
Now you will hear the recording again. Speaker 1.
I studied business at university with the intention of working in the stock market. That idea didn't set my pulse racing, but I didn't know what else to do with my life, and the prospect of making a decent salary was attractive. By chance, a friend took me to a screening of a documentary about children living in poverty. I couldn't believe conditions like that existed in this country, and I just knew I had to do something about it. So, I immediately applied to work for a charity. The money isn't great, but I feel an incredible sense of purpose in what I do every day, and we're making progress in the towns where we work. Conditions aren't as bad as they were a few years ago. If we can keep that progress going, I'll be happy.
Speaker 2.
I'm taller and bigger than a lot of people, so finding clothes or shoes that fit me is a constant challenge and not one that I enjoy. Even when I could find things that were the right size, the range of colours or styles was always limited. I often ended up wearing things because I could wear them, rather than because I wanted to. Over the years, whenever I met somebody else who was big or tall, we would commiserate with each other about the difficulty of finding things that fit. Then, one day, something clicked, and I thought to myself that maybe I should open a shop selling such things. Success was almost immediate. I'm doing so well, in fact, that I'm hoping to open a second branch in the not-too-distant future.
Speaker 3. I've been a scientist for a couple of decades now. My work is important, but pretty complex. I would often get feedback that I was good at explaining my work, so I approached a publisher about developing a popular guide to the field, and my proposal was accepted. I'm almost finished with the writing, and my hope is that it will be out next year. As to how I got started, a science teacher at school took me aside after class one day and told me that I asked really insightful questions. I didn't often get praise from adults, so her comment not only stayed with me, but also opened my eyes to the fact that science was something I was good at and enjoyed. After that, my career path was pretty much set. Speaker 4.
I've enjoyed tinkering around in the kitchen since I was a young kid, helping my mother and father to prepare dinner. I loved the feeling of being able to make something delicious out of everyday ingredients. And I loved the reactions of family and friends to the food I created even more. Needless to say, it wasn't a surprise to anyone when I became a chef. I'm not one of these superstar chefs who is a household name, but I do feel I've achieved a lot professionally. Now, I'm interested in pushing myself and learning new things. I'm particularly fascinated by the incredible variety of Asian food, and so I'm planning to spend a couple of years over there learning from some of the masters. The language barrier may be a problem, but good food and good cooking is a language anyone can understand.
Speaker 5.
After college, I fell into a job teaching English overseas. It wasn't really what I wanted to do, but it felt like a good stopgap. I was on a plane home to visit my family one day and was sitting next to somebody in the advertising industry. He liked to talk. I was happy just to listen and ask questions, and the stories he told me about his work really resonated with me. I got his business card and contacted him about the possibility of getting an entry-level position at his firm. To my surprise, the response was positive, and within a few months I was back in this country permanently and working my way up the corporate ladder. An ad I created was recently put up for an award, and I'll find out whether I've won in the next couple of days. Fingers crossed.
That is the end of part two. Part 3, questions 23 to 30. You will hear two friends, Martin and Valerie, discuss how they deal with some of the challenges of being a self-employed freelancer. For each question 23 to 30, mark one letter, A, B, or C, for the correct answer. You will hear the recording twice. You have 45 seconds to read through the questions. Now listen and mark A, B, or C.
So, what are you working on these days, Martin? Anything interesting?
Well, I finished the logo design for that big client in London about a week ago. And since then, I've been writing a post on how to stop procrastinating when I have to make a big decision. I hope to finish in a couple of days.
Oh, yeah. What do you say in it?
You know what it's like when you're a freelancer. A lot of decisions feel like big ones. There's not often people to bounce ideas off or help you make the decision. And when you work for yourself, most decisions can affect not only your business, but also your whole life.
I know what you mean.
For several years, I've been struggling to make important decisions. I would think too much and wait to make a decision until I had all the information I thought I needed to make the correct choice. Often it would take a long time to get that information, and still I wouldn't have all the information I needed. So it would delay my decision making, as I would then try to find out one more thing. I was paralysing myself, in other words. So I did some research and came across this idea called the three-quarters rule, which aims to simplify the decision-making process. The rule says that when you think you have two-thirds to three-quarters of the information you need to come to a decision, then go ahead and make your choice.
What's the rationale behind it?
The basic idea is that most of us learned at school and university that getting the answer right is the most important thing. After all, a wrong answer can be the difference between success or failure on a test, right? In business, though, failure is inevitable at times. When that happens, it's often more important to be fast and agile, so that even if you find you've made a mistake, you can quickly recognise that and stop wasting your time, energy and resources on something that's going nowhere. The three-quarters rule is kind of like saying, look, with that proportion of the information you need, you'll make decisions more quickly and you can expect to be right about 75% of the time. I've been using the method for a few months now and I have to say that it works well for me. I've only made the wrong choice once and I've saved several days of frustration. So it's definitely a winning concept as far as I'm concerned.
That's a really interesting idea. I had a very similar problem when I was starting out as a freelancer, actually. I would take ages to make a decision and then stress myself out afterwards, worrying about whether I'd made the right choice or not. That made it hard to do the best work for my clients. This went on for years and years.
How did you eventually deal with it?
I came across this book called The 5-Second Rule by a woman called Mel Robbins. Any time you have to make a decision, she advocates counting down from 5 to 1 and then making the decision.
5 seconds and then make a decision, just like that?
Yeah, just like that. Surprising, right? But it works, much like your three-quarters rule works. The idea is that with just 5 seconds to decide, you can't do any research, thinking or procrastinating. You just have to go with what feels like the right thing to do, what your heart is telling you, not what your head is saying.
I love the idea of making a decision in just 5 seconds because I would save so much time. But without any thinking, aren't you worried that you're going to make the wrong choice at least half of the time?
Not really. I mean, I do make the wrong choice sometimes, but there's actually some research that suggests many people are as accurate making decisions based on their feelings as making decisions based on logic. In other words, the decision they come to is the same whether they make it after 5 seconds based on feelings or 5 days based on thoughts. As I only spend 5 seconds on each decision, I don't have any emotional investment in the choice I make. That means that it's pretty easy for me to recognise when a decision is the wrong one and change my course of action. In the past, I've sometimes found that if I spend days making a decision, I convince myself that I made the right choice and will then refuse to admit that it may not have been the best choice.
I'm not sure I'd feel comfortable making every decision in just 5 seconds, but I might try your system out for decisions that aren't very significant. If it works, I'll add it to my article, if you wouldn't mind.
That would be fine. Let me know how it works out for you. My decision-making system works for me, but I'm wondering if I could adapt your three-quarters rule as a way to avoid procrastinating when I need to start work on something.
How so?
Well, I tend to put off starting work on something until I'm 100% ready to go, meaning I start most projects late, which isn't productive. If I started when I was just three-quarters ready, I could get things moving much earlier.
I hadn't thought about that, but it's an interesting idea.
Now you will hear the recording again.
So, what are you working on these days, Martin? Anything interesting?
Well, I finished the logo design for that big client in London about a week ago. And since then, I've been writing a post on how to stop procrastinating when I have to make a big decision. I hope to finish in a couple of days.
Oh, yeah. What do you say in it?
You know what it's like when you're a freelancer. A lot of decisions feel like big ones. There's not often people to bounce ideas off or help you make the decision. And when you work for yourself, most decisions can affect not only your business, but also your whole life.
I know what you mean.
For several years, I've been struggling to make important decisions. I would think too much and wait to make a decision until I had all the information I thought I needed to make the correct choice. Often it would take a long time to get that information, and still I wouldn't have all the information I needed. So it would delay my decision-making, as I would then try to find out one more thing. I was paralysing myself, in other words. So I did some research and came across this idea called the three-quarters rule, which aims to simplify the decision-making process. The rule says that when you think you have two-thirds to three-quarters of the information you need to come to a decision, then go ahead and make your choice.
What's the rationale behind it?
The basic idea is that most of us learned at school and university that getting the answer right is the most important thing. After all, a wrong answer can be the difference between success or failure on a test, right? In business, though, failure is inevitable at times. When that happens, it's often more important to be fast and agile, so that even if you find you've made a mistake, you can quickly recognise that and stop wasting your time, energy and resources on something that's going nowhere. The three-quarters rule is kind of like saying, look, with that proportion of the information you need, you'll make decisions more quickly, and you can expect to be right about 75% of the time. I've been using the method for a few months now, and I have to say that it works well for me. I've only made the wrong choice once, and I've saved several days of frustration. So it's definitely a winning concept as far as I'm concerned.
That's a really interesting idea. I had a very similar problem when I was starting out as a freelancer, actually. I would take ages to make a decision and then stress myself out afterwards, worrying about whether I'd made the right choice or not. That made it hard to do the best work for my clients. This went on for years and years.
How did you eventually deal with it?
I came across this book called The 5-Second Rule by a woman called Mel Robbins. Any time you have to make a decision, she advocates counting down from 5 to 1 and then making the decision.
5 seconds and then make a decision, just like that?
Yeah, just like that. Surprising, right? But it works, much like your three-quarters rule works. The idea is that with just 5 seconds to decide, you can't do any research, thinking or procrastinating. You just have to go with what feels like the right thing to do, what your heart is telling you, not what your head is saying.
I love the idea of making a decision in just 5 seconds because I would save so much time. But without any thinking, aren't you worried that you're going to make the wrong choice at least half of the time?
Not really. I mean, I do make the wrong choice sometimes, but there's actually some research that suggests many people are as accurate making decisions based on their feelings as making decisions based on logic. In other words, the decision they come to is the same whether they make it after 5 seconds based on feelings or 5 days based on thoughts. As I only spend 5 seconds on each decision, I don't have any emotional investment in the choice I make. That means that it's pretty easy for me to recognise when a decision is the wrong one and change my course of action. In the past, I've sometimes found that if I spend days making a decision, I convince myself that I made the right choice and will then refuse to admit that it may not have been the best choice.
I'm not sure I'd feel comfortable making every decision in just 5 seconds, but I might try your system out for decisions that aren't very significant. If it works, I'll add it to my article, if you wouldn't mind.
That would be fine. Let me know how it works out for you. My decision-making system works for me, but I'm wondering if I could adapt your three-quarters rule as a way to avoid procrastinating when I need to start work on something.
How so?
Well, I tend to put off starting work on something until I'm 100% ready to go, meaning I start most projects late, which isn't productive. If I started when I was just three-quarters ready, I could get things moving much earlier.
I hadn't thought about that, but it's an interesting idea.
That is the end of Test 3.